Fuse Box. This is Fuse Box number 263. Reich and Roll. And you are goose-stepping to a totally deranged drummer.
Yeah. You know, they look so smart in those pressed brown shirts. Don't they, though?
Of course, there is that little dip at the end of the road there.
Now, that's just going to be a fortune in dry cleaning. Yeah. Welcome in, friends, to this, the 263rd edition of Fusebox, patriotically entitled Reich and Roll. And I'm your parboiled and indecently seasoned host, Mark Rose. And over there, lurking in the shadows of the flashing faders and blinking knobs, is the Prime Minister of Playback, Milt Keynes, everybody.
Well, thank you kindly. You know, he calls it a Roman salute. Well, thank you, Commandant Musk, for clearing that up for us.
Yeah, I'd say he's Roman around a Zeke Heil. Yeah, you know, what we're talking about, the unfortunate gesture that Elon Musk made at the inauguration ceremonies a while back.
You know, honestly, when he did it once, I thought, okay, he's just yanking our collective chains.
Yeah.
But when he did it a second time...
Yeah, it became a bit chilling. Yeah. I still think, though, he's pushing our buttons. You know, this is what the next 4 years is going to look like. A lot of big noise, followed by a flurry of attempted chaos, or as we like to say around here, a lot of puff and buzzle.
Yeah, because the courts will hang him up in procedure, just like he does with all of his, still pending, by the way, lawsuits against him.
There are a few ideas the guy has that will meet some legal obstacles along the way. I don't know about changing the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. That just seems silly to me anyway.
Deporting millions of folks or rescinding the naturalized citizen thing. That might be a stickler, too.
Well, you know, a federal judge in Washington State has already slapped that down as being, quote, blatantly unconstitutional and added... Where were the attorneys during this executive order?
Under the table, kissing the orange guy's...
Both California and Oregon have come out clearly stating that they will not have anything to do with the forced deportation of citizens, as have 22 attorneys general across the U.S.
Yeah, you know, when California took it a step further and said... Here's the line in the sand, you orange fuck. Make our day.
Yeah, once again, putting law enforcement in a regrettable position to have to enforce this crazy idea.
Yeah, we're going to see a bunch of protests and resistance about this thing. You can be damn sure of that.
Already in motion. And we said we wouldn't give this guy as much air.
Yeah, but when he steps over the line... and starts messing again with human rights and liberties, we just can't be all mute on this stuff.
Yeah, that's very true, Mr. Keynes. And in addition to the aforementioned commentary on the orange guy's behavement, we have a new entry from our buddy 42nd Street Pete on his Grindhouse Minute segment. This one is, again, historical and out of its mind as well. Also, a Hot Wire of Science bit that asks the burning question, could mouse sperm orbiting Earth be the future of humanity?
What?
All this and a whole lot less. Stay with us, won't you?
What?
Say a little prayer, darling.
big news, friends. Grindhouse Resurrection Magazine is back with a vengeance.
Over 140 pages of deliriously demented and historically accurate info on this wondrously whacked period of cinema. This issue features an article by Pete Chiarella on three blaxploitation films that no one ever talks about, and he tells you why. And along that same topic, Bill Karschmidt discusses two of the genre's finest offerings ever produced. Then, John Satzer lifts the creaking lid on another obscurity, Impulse, from 1974, starring William Shatner as a maniacal killer con man. Yeah, not to be missed. And there's just so much more. Head on over to 42ndStreetPete.net and pick up a copy. This one is bursting at the seams with goodness, so get them while they're still in stock. That's 42ndStreetPete.net.
The show for everybody, but not everybody will like it. TheFuseBoxShow.com.
Hey, quick programming note, friends. You may recall that last October, we did a special program for John Barber's reimagined radio series, a newly adapted story that Gerald McQuinn and I originally produced back in the dim days of 1980, called Night of the Eclipsoid Man. It was an episode of the first radio series we had ever produced, called Dry Smoke and Whispers. Well, we rebooted that one with an all-new cast and shiny new production values, and I'm happy to say that according to John's stats, it is the most popular show of his series for 2024, based on downloads and streaming stats.
Well, congrats, bro!
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's really great to hear. And we, of course, are eternally grateful to the folks who helped make that show possible. I'll place a link in this here episode show description for those who want to check it out.
Well, so what about this year?
Yeah, we're indeed producing another story for this October called Transformateur. And I'll have more info on that as we get closer to release. But thanks again to John for all the great work he does on Reimagined Radio and for giving us the platform to tell some new stories.
Will there be a lot of screaming and yelling in this one, too? Kidding. How about a nice hot wire?
The hot wire of science.
Can't wait to get to this one, huh?
Well, I mean, mouse splooge. How are...
Yes, it's quite the notion. For a very long time, scientists have pondered what are the chances of a civilization to thrive in space, including the question, can we even reproduce in space?
Be fun as hell research project. Well, you can sign me up for that one.
No doubt, Mr. Keynes. So to answer that puzzling question, freeze-dried mouse sperm stored aboard the International Space Station in a radiation protection box could help give us a better understanding of mammals' ability to procreate off-Earth.
So they've already done this test?
Well, yeah, part one anyway. The specimens have been stored aboard the ISS for a while now, and when the specimens get back to terra firma next year, Taruhiko Wakayama, a professor at the University of Yamanashi's Advanced Biotechnology Center, will study them to determine what impact the space environment has had, and if they can be used to create healthy offspring.
Huh.
Yeah. Back in his laboratory in Japan, Wakayama is developing a device that will allow astronauts to conduct rodent in vitro fertilization aboard the ISS in the coming years. Ultimately, the experiments could help save mankind, he says. He goes on to say that our aim is to establish a system for safely and permanently preserving Earth's genetic resources somewhere in space, whether on the moon or elsewhere, so that life can be revived, even if Earth faces catastrophic destruction. That's a rather grim prediction. If this chap's name rings a distant bell with you, friends, it's because in 1997, he and another academic developed a novel method that they used to clone the first mouse from adult cells.
Wait. Was that the one that had the ear growing on its back?
No. That was another project.
The ear back project?
Well, I'm not really sure what
Did they have a toe head project where they grew a toe where the head should be?
No, I think you're thinking of Project 2025.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. Wakayama led a study on the development of mouse embryos in space, something that had previously only been done with creatures like amphibians and fish. And he and his team pioneered a freeze-drying method used to send mouse sperm to the ISS, where it was stored in a freezer, for up to 6 years. When the samples got back to Earth, the researchers rehydrated them and produced healthy baby mice.
Holy carp. Should we be saving our specimens too?
For what possible good, Mr. Gaines?
Well, I mean, you know, recolonization. I mean, after the giant mantis aliens wipe everything out, which is, as things are going right now, could be Tuesday.
Yeah, bring it. From that study of reconstituting little mice babies, they determined that freeze-dried sperm could stay viable for 200 years in space. Although that's pretty impressive, Wakayama says it's absolutely not long enough for our future. With his latest space specimens, he's using a new device to protect sperm stored at room temperature from radiation to see if it might be possible to store samples in space indefinitely. Now, that's nothing new either. For decades, scientists have been launching earthly creatures into space to study how microgravity and cosmic radiation impact biological processes, including reproduction. In 1989, for example, 32 fertilized chicken eggs were sent into orbit to study how they develop without gravity. In an experiment that was sponsored by the American fast food chain KFC and nicknamed, here it comes, Chicks in Space.
No, not really.
Yeah, really. Unfortunate pun notwithstanding. Tadpoles, born on the space shuttle Endeavour in 1992, became the first vertebrates to spend the first few days of life in space. And there, they swam erratically and struggled to find air bubbles to breathe. And in 2007, a cockroach named Nadezhda, which means hope in Russian, gave birth to 33 offspring conceived in orbit. They were mostly normal, aside from abnormally dark exoskeletons.
Oh, sure. And then 3 days later, grew 12 feet tall and ate the crew. But did they report that? No.
Yeah, that one slipped through the proverbial cracks, Mr. Keynes, or perhaps scuttled into an overhead heating vent. Yeah. Well, anyway, in late 2026... the NASA-led Artemis program will return astronauts to the moon for the first time since 1972.
Bullshit.
Where it hopes to develop an ongoing presence. And if SpaceX founder Elon Musk's predictions are accurate, the first crewed mission to Mars could be on its way in the next 4 years.
Yeah, he'll set that up right after he gets back from his Nazi camp on the dark side of the moon.
Well, scientists already know that space travel can wreak havoc on the human body. Cosmic radiation can cause mutations in DNA that increases the risk of cancer and causes other ailments. Microgravity can cause vision problems, a weakened immune system, and muscle and bone loss. But Wakayama believes his work will be crucial as humans spend more time in space. Damaged DNA in sperm and eggs, for example, could pass genetic abnormalities on to the next generation, he says.
You think?
And without the directional pull of gravity, a fertilized embryo might not be able to develop properly. He says, the formation of the nervous system and the development of limbs, we don't know if this will happen properly in microgravity, where there is no up or down.
Well, as your buddy Frank Zappa said, it could mutate insanely.
Yes. Yes, it could. Imagine the possibilities. Wakayama plans to stick to studying mice. His IVF project has been accepted by Japan's space agency, but the device that will be used to complete the IVF is still under development. He hopes that it will be ready for launch to the ISS within 2 years. In sci-fi movies, people live on other planets and babies are born, but we don't even know if that's possible yet, he says. Well, he hopes his experiments can help shed light on whether humans can reproduce and develop normally in the harsh environment of space. If we can confirm that, it will bring reassurance, says Wakayama. And if it doesn't work, we need to understand how to address that challenge.
Well, you know, I wouldn't sweat it. It's like I say, the giant mantis aliens will put a quick stop to humans going anywhere. Except maybe Altoona.
Elon, the scent that drives women wild. Available at Tesla dealerships near you. TheFuseBoxShow.com.
Well, we've got another deep dive into the grindhouse world here from our buddy 42nd Street Pete, and it's a real smoker. From 1970 comes El Condor.
With 100 Apaches as your army, you slaughter the soldiers in the arms of their women. Scale the walls of El Condor with steel spikes tied to your feet. And use one damn sexy woman to challenge the entire Mexican army.
And now it's time for another Grindhouse Minute with 42nd Street Pete.
Our next installment is a film from 1970 called El Condor. And this film actually was one of the first films to get an R rating for nudity and violence. And this film starred the first pairing of Lee Van Cleef and Jim Brown. Now, this isn't the Lee Van Cleef everyone would be used to, you know, the steely-eyed gunfighter impeccably dressed and everything. Seems there's a backstory to this one, too. Larry Cohen had wrote the script. They had built this huge fortress in Spain, which they basically used in Conan the Barbarian and another spaghetti western, A Reason to Live, Reason to Die. Well, the thing was, something about Lee Van Cleef would not get on the plane to go over and shoot the movie. And Larry Cohen got a hold of him, and they were going back and forth, and he goes, I'm not wearing this fucking toupee anymore. So Larry, you don't have to wear the toupee, just go. So basically, Lee is playing this half-crazy desert rat who is looking for gold, and Jim Brown is in this prison, actually shackled to Elijah Cook Jr. for 5 whole minutes that he's in the film. Then he escapes, and he sees Lee Van Cleef's character, Giroux, in a bar, drinking with some Mexican bandits, one of whom's Ricardo Palacios, who seems to be a fixture in these films. So the bandits follow him back to his place and try to rob him, and he's blowing them away, and Jim Brown shows up, and he goes, about this fortress El Condor that's loaded with gold, and we can get this. And Giroux goes, well, you got to kill your share, so Jim Brown shoots an overhang and crushes a whole bunch of bandits. So then they go to El Condor, which is this big fortress, lorded over by Patrick O'Neill as Chavez, this colonel or whatever. And there's all kinds of hijinks going on, including a strip by Marianna Hill, who claims it wasn't her, but it's like, okay, then how did they superimpose your head on a nude body? So there's all kinds of double crosses, and it winds up that what they were looking for isn't what it seemed. Then it also starred Chief Iron Eyes Cody, who who's about as Indian as I am. He's the one who did the Indian with the big tear, you know, with the pollution and stuff like that. So yeah, this was a real departure for Van Cleef, and it was the first time he was with Jim Brown. And Jim Brown was sort of, it seemed they couldn't get Jim Brown over. I mean, they put him with Gene Hackman, they put him with Ernest Borgnine, Donald Sutherland, a couple things. But it seemed after he worked with Lee, that's when he took off with the Slaughter films and a couple other things. And he also did go back and work with Lee on two other films, Take a Hard Ride and Kid Vengeance. That's our Grindhouse Minute for today.
This has been another Grindhouse Minute with 42nd Street Pete.
Man, I gotta say this, bro. Marianne Hill was smoking hot.
Yeah, quite the looker indeed. This was, you know, 1970. Really early, so that R rating was pretty new. Anyone remember the very short-lived M rating?
Oh, hell yeah. I think the first one I ever saw was Candy from, like, 1969.
Very nice reference there, Mr. Keynes. Quasi-obscure, even.
Well, I have my moment.
Well, for sure, most folks weren't accustomed to Westerns having a restricted audience tag back then. And,
yeah, which I'm sure filled the place to the rafters.
Oh, it does seem to work that way, though, doesn't it? Lee Van Cleef was quite the character actor. He could play crazy guy, dark villain, and then turn right around and be the hero of the piece. Actually, that was exactly the case in both Sergio Leone Westerns he was in. He played a good guy in For a Few Dollars More, where he was the protagonist along with Clint Eastwood. And then in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, he was most definitely the bad guy.
Oh, I remember him from The Rifleman. I think he was in that, like, you know, a couple times.
Yeah, right. And also The Untouchables television series and all sorts of television. Always a very compelling actor. Really enjoyed watching him. He left us just a few short years ago. But thanks to 42nd Street Pete for that one. And he'll be back next time with the highly infamous and almost better than it should have been treat from 1985, Creature.
In the near future, in the shadow of Saturn's rings, stranded beneath the surface of the barren moon called Titan, scientists find the one thing they never expected.
Is anybody here?
Was expecting them.
Ah! Oh my God!
And with that, we'll call it a show, friends, but not before thanking our contributors to this edition of the show, Sabra May and Gregory Wilson for outstanding vocal ideafications. Thanks as well to 42nd Street Pete for another fun-filled Grindhouse Minute. And thanks as par usual to the Intercoastal Man of Mystery over there, Milt Keynes, for technical assistance and so forth and so on and all that.
A true slice, bro. And folks, if you haven't done so already, why not start the new year off right by joining us over there on Patreon? It really does help the show out.
Yes. Yes, it does. And you'll get some free swag, early releases, and that super secret, thought to be a joke, video of J.D. Vance and a purple Barca lounger that really defies description.
Patreon.com/TheFuseBoxShow. Get yourself started.
Thanks as well to the folks at Grindhouse Resurrection Magazine for their continued goodwill. The newest issue is out, and it's huge! 144 pages of grimy goodness. Please check them out at 42ndStreetPete.net. And, of course, thanks to you, friends, for pushing play on this edition of the show. We do so appreciate it. We know there are countless yapping heads trying to get your attention these days. So we appreciate very much you spending your valuable time with us. I have been your tremendously overpriced but devalued immediately host, Mark Rose, saying, until our next cartoon.
Fuse Box.